It's time for Twig This Week in Google. Matthew Ingram, Kevin Marks, and Aaron Newcomb are here. We're going to talk about the latest news on Twitter and on Facebook and on Amazon's Echo. It's a lot of great stuff. As always, a great conversation's ahead on Twig.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twig.
Bandwidth for This Week in Google is provided by Cachefly, CacheFly.com. This is Twig, This Week in Google, episode 370, recorded September 14th, 2016. The avocado is a pear-shaped fruit. This Week in Google is brought to you by the all-new Basecamp 3. Discover a much more organized way to work with your team. Try it out free at basecamp.com/twit. And by Eero. Why settle for just a Wi-Fi router when you can have a brilliant, hyper-fast, super simple Wi-Fi system? No more buffering, no more dead zones. Finally, Wi-Fi that works. For free overnight shipping, visit Eero.com and at checkout select overnight shipping and enter the offer code TWIG. And by Rocket Mortgage from Quicken Loans. Rocket Mortgage brings the mortgage process into the 21st century with a fast, easy, and completely online process. Check out Rocket Mortgage today at quickenloans.com/twig. It's time for Twig This Week in Google, the show where we talk about, well, I don't know what we're going to talk about today because Jeff Jarvis is out for the week. So is Stacey Higginbotham. Both are traveling, doing other things. On the other hand, we've got a great panel here, and we're just going to talk about whatever they want to talk about, starting from my left with Aaron Newcomb, who is, of course, a welcome regular on our network in a lot of ways. I see him a lot on Floss Weekly. Thank you, Aaron, for being here.
You bet. Anytime.
Just was on the new Screensavers.
Yep.
And works for NetApp, which is a storage company.
That's correct, yeah.
Although you keep up this podcasting stuff, you may be able to make that a full-time gig.
Hey, you never know.
Also here to his right is Kevin Marks, our good friend, champion of the indie web. Nice to see you again, Kevin.
Good to see you too.
Kevin's thumbs are all over the technology you use every day, starting with the BBC and then Apple with QuickTime and Google itself, British Telecom. You can find more at kevinmarks.com or, of course, indiewebcamp.com, which...
Or indieweb.org, as it is now.
Oh, you got indieweb.org. I like it.
Yes.
Did you have to buy that, or was it just floating around?
No, I think we just... Someone got it a while ago, but we decided to switch over, because it's not just about the camp. It's about the...
It's about the indie web. Yeah.
About the indie web, yeah.
And that's... I'll tell you, that's a cause I sure can get behind. I'm a big supporter of that. Also with us, haven't seen him in a while, I'm thrilled to get Matthew Ingram from Fortune here. Hey, Matthew.
Hey.
What is that shirt? Are you wearing a hockey jersey?
No, I think this is from the Dominican Republic.
Oh, you confuse me.
I can wear a hockey jersey if you want.
Yeah, he's from Canada. Why isn't he wearing a hockey jersey? Happy birthday, Kevin Marks. They're telling us yesterday was your birthday. I didn't realize
that. It was indeed my birthday, yes.
Happy birthday. Nice to have you.
Thank you.
Should we sing?
Yeah, no. We can, though. That's the good news.
I don't know.
We don't have to play Warner Chappell music a penny.
Mine was Saturday. So
happy birthday to you.
Yeah.
You too. There we go.
We're like twins almost.
Nice. I would ask you what sun sign you are, but I don't think it really makes any difference at all.
35.
I don't know. What do you want to talk about today? We're still waiting for the other shoe to drop on now that Apple has announced its phones. Will be with great interest that we'll watch. And the rumor is in 3 weeks, Google announced its phones, the code name, no longer Nexus. These will be Pixel phones. If you're to believe the rumors, Android Police says Google's Pixel phones will be the iPhone competitors we've demanded for years. I kind of agree with the premise, which is that Google has... They've really kind of punched down a little bit with these with these phones. Initially, they were developer phones, right? So that's fine. You just a platform that's pure, clean, and suitable for a developer with the latest version of Android was sufficient. But I want, especially in light of all the malware and the problems we're seeing out there, I want to see a flagship phone come out of Mountain View.
Yeah. Well, no, you know, they have been that to some extent. I mean,
the 6P is pretty good.
Yeah.
Well, this is the one before the 6, but it's the Motorola one. But
you have the 6, the Shamu, yeah. The world's largest. You have the phone that proved to me that 6 inches is too big.
I just love the screen on it.
Yeah, I just like a shade screen. Under 6 inches. And we know now, of course, that the Note 7 is no longer a pretender to the throne.
Right.
Which is sad. What a great phone. I would see, but what I'd like to see is a Note 7-like phone made by Google with guaranteed Android updates. Mm-hmm. Will they do that this time around? Matthew, you agree. You seem to think this would be a good thing.
Yeah, I do. And you know, I've been happy with, I've had Nexuses. I don't have one right now. I've got an LG, but I was happy with them, but I think they never really reached the sort of same level competitively where they were going to appeal to a huge numbers of people.
Because they're not sold by a carrier, partly, right?
Partly, and so people just weren't exposed to them, but also all the benefits of them seemed just too nerdy to explain to people. So, I get updates pushed straight from Google. Well, that doesn't, most people... it's hard to explain why that's a big deal. And I just think the sort of the finish and the production and just the marketing of them or lack of marketing, they never really hit the kind of same level.
I think there's a perception, I don't true or not, and I think Google contributes to this perception that Android phones are the cheap phones.
Mm-hmm.
There are certainly a lot of cheap Android phones out there. But that's why I would love to see. And I guess Samsung are the notch. I mean, $850 for a Note 7, that's right up there with Apple. It's not a cheap
And
phone.
You can cook on it, apparently.
Yeah. You could use it as a... I actually had one, and I loved it. It was a great phone, and mine was not problematic at all. Never got hot. But I didn't dare keep it.
Yeah.
I didn't
want to take it on a plane.
Well, that's right. I'm not... You know, I don't want to be singled out at the gate.
Yeah.
Although, how they're enforcing that, are they looking at people's phones?
Actually, I saw someone mention on Twitter they had to prove that they had a Note 6, I think it was.
You're kidding.
And that it wasn't
really?
A Note 7, yeah.
Wow.
Well, wow.
Is this overblown? I mean, we know that there's only been maybe 70 incidents so
yeah.
far. Yeah. Sure. 2.5 million phones.
Yeah.
But and it was only, is it only while being plugged in?
I praise Samsung for their alacrity and thoroughness in the recall. I don't praise them for their forthcomingness, if that's a word. In other words, they haven't.
It is now.
It is. I just made it a word. They haven't really told us what it is. What's the problem,
no.
right?
No.
Well, and that's a big problem for them, actually, too, because they, you know, sources have said that this only affects North American or at least this side of the Pacific, this phones that were shipped here.
Phones with the Samsung affiliate battery. As opposed to a Chinese battery.
That's what it appears to be.
But that's not the way a lot of media outlets are reporting it, especially the ones that don't know any better, right?
Well, you don't want to report... Okay, so I had the Chinese phone, and I brought it into T-Mobile. And the T-Mobile clerk said, well, you know, this is the one made in China. You're probably okay. And I said, well, is it your recommendation that I not turn it in? He said, no. No. My recommendation is you turn it in. Nobody wants to be the one that said, well, that phone's okay. And Samsung's not saying. I mean, I wish they would.
Yeah.
There was a phony IMEI database. Don't trust that. Samsung isn't even really saying exactly what's wrong. So we don't even know if it's only while charging. Although apparently they've said, we're going to send out an update in a week or two that will only allow you to charge your Note 7 to 60%. That kind of implies it's an overcharging problem.
Yeah.
Right.
And they have said it's the battery, right?
I think
we know
they
it's the battery.
Well, it's clearly the battery. I mean, that's where the energy is. So,
well, if you look at where the burn is happening, it's right over the back. The battery is a slice of the phone, like right here on the side. And if you look at it, that's clearly.
Yeah.
But the, have they
the challenge
said
is knowing what's wrong? Because if it's some like low tolerance thing, once the thing's burnt, you can't tell.
Right.
Yeah.
Basically, something's shorting out the battery and it's dumping its entire energy into a piece of metal, and that starts the fire. That's the mechanism for these things.
It's at this point, it's going to be very hard to know what's true. There was a kid yesterday who was burnt, they thought, by a Note 7, turned out by a different Samsung phone, not while charging, while he was holding it. Six-year-old.
Wow.
The video that you see, if you look at it carefully, and this is the video that started it all, that's right where the battery is. And there are those who claim you can see where the fire began up here, right where the circuitry that keeps the battery from overcharging. There's circuitry in lithium-ion batteries that not only prevents overcharging, but has heat sensors. So if the battery starts to heat up while charging, we'll disconnect. And all of those things are designed to prevent exactly this, which is catching on fire. And because, by the way, it's in such there's the volatile chemicals inside of lithium-ion batteries, and so they burn. And it's in a very enclosed space, so that's where you get the explosion. It's like you're burning inside a pressure cooker, and so there are those who say I can look at the phone and I can tell where that it's happening, right exactly where you'd expect it from an overcharge problem. Nevertheless, I wish Samsung would say exactly what's going on. I would love for them to say, here's how to tell. But apparently they don't know because they're going to take them all back. That must cost them a lot of money.
Yeah. It's going to be $1 billion or so.
And not to mention the damage to their reputation.
Well, the stock cratered. I mean, if you look at the stock chart, it's bounced back since.
That's probably not fair because it's only a small percentage of Samsung's overall revenue is the mobile.
But those things always get, I mean, it's just such a black eye. Right. You know,
$26 billion of market value.
It's like you had one job, right?
Yeah.
You're
not to have your phone blow up.
Right.
Yes.
Yeah. List of things your phone should not do. One, catch on fire.
Hell's
Kitchen. This is predicted by XKCD in XKCD number 651.
Okay. Let's get it here. XKCD 651. There's somebody in the chat room says that he was on a United flight from Nashville to Newark this week. And the flight attendant said, if you have a Samsung device, you have to turn it off. We're not going to check to see whether it's a Note 7 or not. Just turn off all Samsung devices. But I don't even know if that's the right answer, because if it's only during charging, here's XKCD. But if you're worried about bombs, why are you letting me keep my laptop batteries? If I overvolted them and breached the cells, it would make a sizable explosion. And his wife or girlfriend says, oh, God, it's okay, dear. In a moment, he'll realize I have a good point and return my water. Oh, dear.
Yep.
Yeah, you really don't want to talk logic with the TSA.
No.
You just want to shut up.
Just shut up.
Do whatever they say. Yeah. And thank God you got on your plane. I actually feel bad for Samsung. I think they made a great device. They obviously made a mistake. This was supposedly, and again, I would like to hear Samsung's story, but what I've read is that the Samsung battery affiliate, for the first time they'd used this new Samsung battery affiliate, and they were the ones who made the bad batteries, that no recall in China because China requires all the phones be made in China with Chinese components, including the battery. My T-Mobile phone, as I think most T-Mobile phones, were made with Chinese batteries in China. Didn't have the, what is it, TSDI, TDSI battery that supposed. But again, a lot of this is conjecture.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like we should.
Apparently the stock lost $14 billion in value.
Yeah.
Monday.
But you know what? To me, that's a buy signal because Samsung makes bulldozers and refrigerators.
Exactly. And it has rebounded. Even if it's a massive recall, it's only a couple billion.
It's 5% of their business, the mobile business.
Yeah.
It's not. Wow. I think there's some overreaction. And at the same time, like my T-Mobile salesman, if you ask me, should I return it? Yes. Yes. Because they give you your money back and they give you a $25 credit.
Yeah.
The sad thing is they don't have Note 7s to replace it with.
Right.
And I think that anybody who says they'll have them in a week or two is wrong. There's no way, especially now that Samsung has gone to the Consumer Product Safety Commission and is working on a full, total, real, legal recall, there's no way they're going to be able to get that phone back in the country without tests. And how long is that going to take?
Yeah, that's really too bad because these are effectively lost customers for the large part, I think, right? Because these are people, if you bought a 7 when it came out, that means you're a leader in this. You're willing to spend a lot of money for that big phone, and you're not going to go get an alternative phone like a Galaxy
or customer you could get.
Yeah. So there's nothing really available for that customer.
Oh yeah, there is. Just happens. Apple just came out with a new phone, and it's the same price. And I bet you Apple 50% of those Note 7 customers went to Apple. I would bet you. Because there isn't anything comparable in the Android space.
Right.
Galaxy S7. S7's pretty close. But it's 6 months old. Anybody who buys a Note 7 wants the latest, greatest. In fact,
Apple stock hit a new high.
Yeah. Samsung down, Apple up. What a surprise. Apple's already said they're not going to report weekend sales figures, pre-sale figures, because whatever the number is, it's just supply number because the demand exceeds the supply. And I think that that's true. Just anybody who's tried to get a new iPhone knows they're pushed back now to November. Same thing with the watches. Apple fans if nothing else, they're consistent. I think Apple's going to benefit greatly.
Definitely. Yeah. Apple fans are like that Futurama, meme. Just shut up and take my money.
Right.
I don't want to hear anything about it. Just
once you lose that customer, I very much guess it's a zero sum game. Once you lose that customer, Samsung's not getting them back.
Yeah. Until the iPhones start blowing up.
Well, that's the other thing. This has happened to everybody, including Apple's had this problem. Dell's had this problem. Toshiba had to do a recall. Lithium ion batteries are inherently kind of dangerous.
Yeah, remember that Dell video of the laptop with flames coming out?
Right. I mean, this XKCD comic is actually correct. These things are.
Of course, you don't sit on your laptop, typically.
You don't have it in your pocket. You're not holding it in your hand. I wonder. So you bring in your phone. You can get a loaner. In some cases, the loaner is like the Samsung, Wonderment or something. It's some weird, crap phone. And you just you're supposed to use that until the Note 7s come in. But in a month when they still haven't come in, what are people going to do? And so I just took the money. I said, fine, give me a credit. I'll figure out what to do. But I also have other phones I could use. What if that's your phone?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, exactly.
You buy an iPhone. Maybe not. Maybe Android. People who love notes. I'm a huge Note fan. I've had every Galaxy Note. I love them. I love the big screen. I love the stylus. Anyway,
Yeah, it's never appealed to me for some reason.
You know what's? If you held the Note 7 before it exploded, you would note that it is a bigger screen than the iPhone. It's 5.7 inches. It is much higher resolution than the iPhone. It's OLED. It's a beautiful screen in a smaller package.
Yeah, that's fair.
So you get, the bezels on the iPhone are gone on the Note. There's no bezels. And
maybe it's just the stylus throws me off.
Well, you don't have to use it.
Yeah.
But if you don't want a stylus and you don't need the bigger screen, you can get the slightly smaller S7. It's the same, basically the same hardware.
It sounds like Apple's going to get rid of the hard button.
They
and
did.
Try and, Notes, yeah, and yeah. go to so the it's a,
so
full
in the,
screen.
On the 7, it's a haptic button. So there's a ring there. You can feel it, but it doesn't actually. It's not actually mechanical. It's like when they went from the spinning click wheel on the iPod to the static click wheel. It's the same thing. And then apparently it buzzes. I haven't held it yet, though. I've talked to several who have.
But it sounds like they're going to get rid of that completely.
And then the rumor is next year. I figure they're going to get rid of all holes. It's going to be as close to a slab of glass as they can get.
Yeah.
Wouldn't even be surprised if they got rid of the lightning port, although that would be a disaster. But
and there'll be no power button. It's just on all the time. Can't turn it off.
No. We know when to turn it off. We'll take care of it.
Yeah, we'll turn it off for you.
Yeah. We can tell. Well, they can when you're not using it.
So they can. Yeah.
What do you need an on-off button for? We'll take it from
here. Good question.
That's Apple's philosophy. We'll take it from here. So October. So supposedly, rumor is October 4th, we'll see the Pixel phones. Reading at the Android developer site, developer.android.com, this is something developers, of course, greatly interested in, the adoption rate on various Android operating systems. There, 0.1% of all Android phones are still running Froyo. Version 2.2, 1.5% gingerbread, 1.4% ice cream sandwich. It goes up, though. By the time you get to Jelly Bean, and there are three different versions of Jelly Bean, 4.1, 4.2, and 4.3, you're getting some numbers here. I'll do some, let's see, that's 13, maybe 15, maybe 16% Jelly Bean. Kit Kat, 27%, that's 4.4. So almost half of all the Android devices are running 4 or earlier.
Mm-hmm.
Then Lollipop. Lollipop's this nice big wedge here. That's the last one.
That's not the biggest single one, isn't it?
Yeah. Yep. That's a total of 24%. 25%, sorry. One quarter of all.
No, 35%.
30? Oh, right. 35%. Wow. More than a third of all Android phones are running 5. Marshmallow, 18.7%, and apparently Nougat is not even big enough to show on this chart.
Well,
it's wow, less than, is that the live one?
Yeah, it's less than 0.1% for Nougat, but that's only because there's only the only people who have Nougat right now are people who have Nexuses. And I guess that new LG phone is going to be the first phone shipping with Nougat. That's all right. I mean, the problem is there's massive Android malware flaws. There's a new one. And nobody is protected. Not even, they're just, I think the September Android security update fixes it. But I don't think I have it on my 6P yet. And if you don't have a Nexus, you're not going to get it for a while. That's not good for Android. I feel like it's like the presidential election. There's really no...
There's no good choice.
There's no good choice.
So who's Trump in this scenario?
I don't know. I think Android is Trump. and stay the course. Apple is the stay the course safe choice.
Right.
Android is going to be... Android is the... Well, you know, it's different... It could be good. It's definitely experimental, and it could also blow up in your hands. I think it is actually a very close metaphor. Not to get political or anything, but I feel like that we are at this point now where I prefer Android phones, but I'm nervous about the rapid spread of malware. There were so many apps that had this. This is a zero day. There were 2.5 million downloads of one of the exploits in Google's Play Store.
Yeah, I got hit by it.
You did?
Mm-hmm.
How did you know?
Well, it just started, everything went haywire.
Oh,
so
my God.
I don't know for sure that that's what it was because I'm not, you know, an Android software engineer and I don't understand enough about it. But the phone...
Did you wipe the phone and start over? You'd have to, right?
Literally just started having seizures. Google Play Store would not load.
Wow.
Google Play Services, the underlying service would not load. Kept saying it wasn't there, but it was there. Tried a whole bunch of different things. Eventually just had to wipe the phone.
Well, and that's probably a smart thing to do because the worst case scenario is that you wouldn't have any weird symptoms, but you would be rooted and have malware on there.
And the problem with that one is, you know, so weird things start happening with your phone. Like 99% of phone owners would just have no clue what to do. Just turn it off and turn it back on again. They don't know, you know, they're not going to go looking for how do I, you know, reinstall Google Play Services when I can't get to the Play Store. They're just going to be like, my phone is busted.
Right. They'll bring it in. But I'd far prefer that. Mm-hmm. To the worst case, which is everything seems completely normal, but meanwhile, everything you're doing is being passed off. Security expert, this is one of these is called Dress Code. 40 different Google Play Store applications.
Yikes.
One of the most popular apps downloaded between 100,000 and 500,000 times. So the advice here, by the way, is, well, make sure you buy an Android phone from somebody who's already agreed to take the Android security updates. Two, don't download frivolous apps. Like the worst one was a Clash of Clans. It was a hack that purported to give you Clash of Clans gold. Don't fall for that.
Right.
You know, get your apps from well-known main, you know, it's not Facebook and Snapchat that are the problem. It's, you know, Chest of Gold for Clash of Clans.
I don't know this, again, because I'm not smart enough, but what started happening before this happened to me was I got Google Play pop-ups generated by random websites. And I'm pretty sure they weren't, you know,
that's legitimate. Almost surely malware, right?
Yeah. Yeah. And yeah. So then all it takes is to click on that. It comes up so quickly.
Right.
You're not sure what to do.
Right.
You know, you don't have to necessarily install the whole thing. Or
it's kind of depressing because I love Android and I really don't like the direction Apple's taking into a more and more closed environment. I like to have more power over my phone, but I just don't know. I mean, I guess my choice at this point, after giving up the Note 7, is I'm only going to get a Google-made phone. That's why, personally, I hope that they do a flagship quality phone.
Mm-hmm.
I want it to be the best. I want Google to make the best Android phone you can buy. Why wouldn't they at this point?
Well, and yet it sounds like from the Android Police thing, as though it's not going to be.
I know.
You know, top of the line.
It's everything. HTC, right?
Mm-hmm. Which I like HTC, actually. I'm glad to see HTC back in the game, although all the rumored stuff that's leaked so far doesn't look like there's anything new or good or interesting about the phones, except that they're made by HTC.
Right.
So. Mm-hmm.
One of the complaints... go ahead, Kevin.
The other thing that Google did was make phones at a good price point. You know, the Nexus 5 was very well competitively priced, and the Motorola ones were actually pretty competitively priced when they were doing those as well.
So offer
so it's
two.
Not just
offer two. Offer a $400.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
And you the way you save is the way that OnePlus 3 has saved and Axon has saved and the Honor 8 from Huawei has saved, which is taking out some of the higher-end features, and then make one that is a... I would love to see a no compromises phone from Google.
Yeah. You definitely want both, yeah.
Make one of each. And you know what, Google? This is the solution to the Note 7 problem. This is the solution to the malware problem. And this is, I think, kind of what Google's thinking is we got to solve this or we're going to, you know, Android is going to end up being a ghetto. By the way, you compare, so Marshmallow is 18.7%. It's been out for more than a year. iOS 10, which came out on Monday, 14.5% already in 3 days.
Yeah.
Actually, that's one day. Yep. That's 24 hours.
Yep.
It's probably 25% by now. And that's
with rumors of them bricking phones, yeah.
Yes, and in the first hour, they're apparently bricking phones. So
yeah, I saw a lot of that.
Yeah, Apple says they fixed that. All right, enough about phones. We have a show called All About Android. That's probably a better place. But
well, the other one there was them saying they're making another 7-inch one. Which
I'm glad.
The Nexus 7. That's good because I love those devices. I've still used them, and I want them to keep making that form factor. It's a really good form factor.
You know, so interesting. Everybody who had a Nexus 7, or not everybody, but many, many people. And I include myself as well as you, love that size. There's something about that size. Now, you like Shamu. You like the 6-inch.
It's the size of a paperback book. It's exactly literally the exact size of a penguin, which means it's a really good one-handed reading device.
Not an Emperor Penguin, a Penguin publisher.
Not an actual penguin.
Yeah, an actual penguin.
I still have my Nexus 7 right here in my drawer.
I use mine. It's on my desk in the other studio. Yeah. I use it every day.
Mine's over there in the other room, yeah. It's a nice device. The weight's good. It's big enough to watch TV on without feeling like you're squinting, and it's big enough to read.
It's supremely portable.
And it works really well as a device you can use on public transit.
and inexpensive.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What was that when they sold it? It was 200 something, right?
Yeah, the last one I bought was $150.
$150.
Yeah, they're going up again now. They're like collectible.
So this one supposedly will be built by Huawei, which made the 6P. I think Huawei is a very good Chinese phone manufacturer. 4 gigs of RAM. That would mean probably a premium device. EvLeak says on track for release before the end of the year. I would think, and we talked about this last week with Stacy, we're thinking this October 4th announcement is going to be more than just phones. They'll announce the availability of the Google Home, Amazon Echo competitor.
4K Chromecast.
4K Chromecast. This could be a very big event. It would make sense. Google would wait till Apple, wait till all that. Okay, now we're going to show what we got.
And the other thing is, will they have some of the VR stuff they were talking about in the spring? Because
is that the daydream,
and the optimized hardware and things for that. And the piece I'm wondering is, does that affect what cameras they use? If they want to make them VR capture devices, that may be interesting as well.
Oh, that'd be interesting. Although I have to say, I'm starting to think that VR was a flash in the pan. I hate to say that, but
it's the new 3D.
I think I really had higher hopes for it. It plays better than 3D in the sense that the first time you use it, you get very excited. But the problem in 3D, I don't think that's the case. But the problem is that many people, it nauseates many people. It's a good experience, but not a compelling, not the one that you want to spend hours a day in that sweaty visor.
I was talking to a guy who's in the business, and I mentioned that the couple of times that I've tried, I get motion sickness, you know, using an electric toothbrush. So it's a big problem. And I was saying, you know, I'm afraid I'm not going to be able to use any of these devices. And he said that they're hoping at least that they can get past that using technology.
No,
so
they've been saying
resolution,
that for years.
Yeah, I know. Adjustments.
It's kind of like big tobacco, the industry, or big sugar, we're learning now. The industry line is, it's latency that's making you queasy, and we can fix that with faster hardware. And they say that, and they've been saying it, and they say it, and every time the new Oculus Rift came out, they said, look, the latency is way down. Isn't this much better? And it's not. I'm convinced. Mm-hmm. It's the disconnect between the convergence distance, your eyes being, if you have two eyes, converge on a point that is the point you're looking at. And then in normal world, that would also be the focal distance. You're looking at your finger, you would focus on that, and that'd be convergence. And just as in 3D, by the way, there's the same problem with 3D. In VR, your convergence and focal distance is not the same.
Right.
And I don't think they can fix that. That's what makes you barf.
There's two things there. One is there's two effects going on at once. One is focal distance and convergence. You're right. That is an issue. The other is that there's two ways you judge distance. One is, are they
bigger,
differently
small.
Focused? Have I got separate things? The other thing you do is you move your head side to side and watch things move against the background.
Right.
Parallax. And that second one hasn't been possible until the latest generation of VR, because the feedback loop wasn't quick enough. So that one does make the difference. It does reduce the nausea quite a lot. But it means that they've got to keep that loop tight. But yeah, the other problem of I'm focusing here, but my eyes think it's over there. That is a problem.
Fix. Yeah.
That's doable. That's part of what's there are things that there are headsets that do that, but they're mostly focused on the AR world, and they're not cheap enough to ship yet. In mass quantities, but you can do the overlay stuff that works at different depths by having a light field thing that projects.
Right.
But yes, but they're still in like research labs. They're not shipping this year.
Well, I'm really interested in that though, because I actually do think that mixed reality, or whatever you want to call it, augmented reality, different companies have different terms. I think that actually has a lot more.
I agree.
Potential than true sort of VR.
I agree. And that you don't get as nauseous because you have real world grounding points.
Exactly.
Tim Cook just said that in an interview. Apple's CEO said, yeah, we think augmented reality, because VR seals you off from the world. Augmented reality, you're part of the world. I think Apple, that's where Apple's putting their dollars. And I think we've learned a little bit from the VR experiment. I'm really thinking, by the way, thank you. Evan Dunn in the chat room has passed along an article where I love this. A VR researcher says, well, the problem is you need a virtual nose. How to reduce VR sickness? Just add a nose, a massive nose sitting in the game frame.
Yeah, that doesn't feel right to me. Nah. You know, that's a nice try, but I just don't know. That's not going to help with either one of those problems we just discussed.
I think you can make VR tenable, but I think it's for a variety of reasons. It's going to be hard to get people to spend hours in a VR helmet.
I think it could be great for some things. I mean, I was fascinated by this company that's focusing on medical applications, not just for doctors and sort of operating, but for, you know, patients who are bedridden, to be able to escape and see, you know, parts of the world they may never see again. I mean, that's fascinating. That's not a broad kind of mass market application, but still interesting.
Well, I'm as somebody who's probably going to have to visit the world that way in the next 20 or 30 years, I'm looking forward to VR in the nursing home.
Yeah.
Because, yeah, it'll open up a whole world to you. And, you know, a lot of this, I think, is I was just talking to somebody yesterday or on Monday, long time computer science guy. And I said, I think a lot of this is influenced by the fact that we all read Neal Stephenson's Snow Crash.
Yeah.
And we just want the metaverse.
Yeah.
And he agreed. He said, yeah, everybody was reading Neal Stephenson 20 years ago. That was the thing. And we're all trying to figure out a way to jack in and be in this virtual environment. But just the desire to make it so doesn't necessarily make it so.
Maybe Second Life will come back.
Yeah. He was, by the way, this is the guy who wrote the Alphaville Herald or whatever, the newspaper in Second Life. Among he also invented Gopher, Pop Mail.
Yeah.
And it was very instrumental in VRML, early VRML experiments.
Who was?
This guy. We interviewed him on Monday. Mark McKay was his name. Great, great interview.
I remember VRML.
Yeah, remember?
Yeah,
he was a big proponent of Second Life, and he said, "Well, the problem with Second Life is this kind of similar to the problem in all social networks. When people are anonymous, they just act badly."
Yeah.
No. I'm going to push back on that one again, as usual. It's not about anonymity. It's about social norms. It's about how people have sort of decided that place behaves, what it's like. So, if there's a culture of misbehaving, then people will join in that misbehavior. If there's a culture of like working together and being polite, they'll join in that culture.
So he said something like that, which is the story or the purpose or the goal of the place also will help that.
Right, exactly.
And he talked about EVE Online, which is a massively multiplayer online role-playing game. He said there are areas in EVE Online where you are evil. That's part of the gameplay. You choose evil. But it's fine because it's sustained by this storyline and this rationale. It's not chaotic evil. Mm-hmm. Twitter is chaotic evil. I don't know.
Did we already talk about this? I read an essay about this a couple of weeks ago.
Oh, good. Yeah. Is this on Epigony?
No. This is on
Medium.
Not even that. It's on a published publication.
What? Like on Dead Trees?
Let me stick that in.
All right, you find it, and we'll talk about it when we come back. We're going to take a little break. I always love Twig because it's our most intellectual show where we get the most abstract and interesting stuff. And I think we couldn't have three better people to do that right now. Kevin Marks from IndieCamp.org. Let's put that up. IndieWeb.org. Sorry. Take away the camp. Leave the web. IndieWeb.org. We'll put that in your lower third, I think. And from NetApp and a host on Floss Weekly and often co-host on New Screensavers, Aaron Newcomb. He still gives out his Google Plus handle.
That's right. I still use Google Plus, and I still prefer it way more than Facebook.
Oh, I do too.
But yeah, what are you going to do?
I noticed myself using social media a lot less in the last few months. Mm-hmm.
Me too.
I think I'm burnt out on it.
Yep.
I just want to keep to myself. And that's why Matthew Ingram is in Ontario. He's at Fortune.com and another great thinker. I love the big thinkers shows. We'll have more in just a little bit. But first, a word from a brand new, I'm very excited, sponsor who is a very old friend. Maybe you saw our interview just a couple of weeks ago with David Heinemeier Hansen, DHH. I've interviewed his partner, Jason Fried, many times. You remember 37 Signals? They're now Basecamp. Last couple of years have been Basecamp. Basecamp 3 is all new, and man, it just gets better and better and better. The key, and we experience it here, is as an organization, as a company grows or a team grows from the easily managed, handful of people to somewhere about 10 to 20 people, it just gets more difficult to have the communications, to stay on track, to work together. And that's what Basecamp solves. Jason and David and the people at Basecamp spend a lot of time thinking about better ways to work. And Basecamp 3 is the tool you're looking for. It brings everyone together. And the tools are fantastic. It's a cloud-based workspace, so you don't have to host a server. It's easy to use. It's always secure. And it puts everything, Jason calls it a single point of truth, so everything is in one spot, all your company's projects and communications. Everyone knows what they need to do, can keep track of what they're doing and what others are doing, where things are on any project. Everyone stays accountable. But it's really better than that because it's not like enforcing accountability. It's about communication. Everybody wants to do a good job, and Basecamp makes it possible. The idea behind Basecamp is that in a real Basecamp, where mountain climbers, gather around the campfire, talk about their preparation to summit. The same applies to business. When you're working on a project, you sit around the campfire and you communicate. This is all based on research, hardcore user research. They discovered 6 core things that businesses of all size needed to do their work best. Message boards, they call those campfires, to stay with the metaphor. That way everybody's on the same page, and you also have a history automatically, so you can look back. Real-time chat, real-time pings. So you could say, hey, ask a question. Automatic check-ins to make sure projects stay on track. To-do lists so people know who's responsible for what. Of course, you've got to have document and file storage. Not only your own, but it'll integrate with whatever you're using, whether it's Dropbox or Google Drive and all of that. So everyone can access and work on the most up-to-date versions. And then a schedule, a calendar that integrates with all the existing calendar solutions so you know where things stand, what's coming up, what you need to do. This is the only product that gives you all the tools in one easy-to-use platform. That saves you time in training and onboarding, too. It's also used a lot for client projects. So it's not just internal collaboration, although it's great for that, especially if you have remote team members. But you can use it with your clients, too. In fact, they have great setups so that your clients only see what you want them to see, not the whole Basecamp, things like that. You can create as many Basecamps as you want. You invite the right people to each one. But now this is the thing I love. It's the reason I want to use it. There's no per user fees. Jason does not believe in seat licenses. Companies of all sizes use Basecamp. Teams say they can't live without it. 100,000 businesses are using it today. I went to the Basecamp site a couple of days ago. 8,000 people signed up for Basecamp last week. Last week. And it's free. You could try it for free. So it takes no time to learn. They have, of course, lots of great tools to help you learn how to use it. But you can sign up right now for a free trial. Get your team on board when you're ready. Play around with it. And look at the pricing, because nobody has better pricing. They really make it easy for small or large and to do this. And because they don't have $29 a month, no matter how big your team is. What? Yeah, this is awesome. Basecamp.com/twit. It's not even that. Right now, it's free. Basecamp.com/twit. Set it up. Give it a try. This is such a good solution. I'm sure you've heard about it. Maybe you've read their books, Rework. These guys really think a long time. And God, I love David and Jason. They're really smart. Basically, David Heinemeier Hansen wrote Ruby on Rails so he could write Basecamp. So that's kind of high recommendation. Basecamp.com/twit, not twig, twit. We got one offer code, and I like that too. Makes it a little bit easier. All right, what were we going to talk about? We were going to talk about social media. We were going to talk about anonymity, and you had an article that you were going to share with us, Kevin Marks.
Yes, which I have stuck in the running order and also in the chat. It's called How Twitter Got Angry.
Ah.
I wrote this after our last conversation.
Yeah.
when we're on here.
Yeah.
And I pitched it to Fast Company and I said, would you like to publish? They said, yeah, sure. So, and, you know, it's like 2,000 words long, so I won't try and reiterate the entire thing. But I'm remaking the argument that I made before, is that Twitter started out as a place that was primarily about following people and choosing who to follow. It showed you who... It shows you stuff by choice, and I got quotes from Evan and people talking about that early on. We believe Twitter is a recipient-driven utility. You choose what content appears in your timeline, was what Jason Goldman said in 2008. And that was the shape of it. The idea was that you saw stuff that you followed. The at replies were there, but they were off to the side. You had to go and look for them specifically, and they weren't the first thing you saw when you got to the site. The first thing you saw was the people you'd chosen to follow, and that shaped the kind of discourse you had there, because you were mostly seeing stuff you'd chosen to see. And when it became a mobile app and the app replies became notifications, that changed the character of Twitter, because suddenly the most important thing was what someone was saying to you, and it stopped you being about who you chose to follow, and it became about who chose to shout at you. Now, that doesn't affect most users initially, because people weren't aware of the mechanism, and the effort to do an ad is not that high. But it has an effect on people whose stuff takes off, because suddenly they get lots of at replies, and that all appears. And even if it's a benign thing. So I had a tweet last week that has got nearly a million views so far, which is, I think, it's probably the most widely read thing I've ever written. And just the fact that that happened meant that my phone was like buzzing continuously, because I was getting replies and reposts and things to it. And this wasn't, you know, the people weren't being mean to me. They were just sharing it and commenting and doing that. But just the sort of the level of traffic that was coming through changed my experience of Twitter, and maybe like stop tweeting for a day. The tweet will take some explaining as well. Hang on, I'll find it for you.
By the way, this is why I hate Twitter. Because it's a lot of very succinct, inevitably shortened, often highly abbreviated, out of context messages. Mm-hmm. I read my Twitter stream and I feel like I'm having a stroke. Like I am I don't understand.
It does, what's going on around me. In jokes, yes. Okay, I'll put the I'll put the tweet in the chat. Hang on. So this
I did
tweet,
that to my. Go ahead.
This tweet was, when did I? 30th of August, I posted this.
How to talk to a woman wearing headphones. Be a Kardashev Type 2 civilization in HD 164.595. When I read that, by the way, there's Jodie Foster in a headphone with a looking, you know, and this is from Contact looking at the dish. When I read that, I go, and I go to the next tweet.
Right. So the point is this, and I thought that would be people's reaction, because there were two. This was reacting to two news stories from a week, 2 weeks ago. There was the how to talk to a woman wearing headphones thing, where some douche had written this thing about, there's a woman wearing headphones. What you should do is go up to her and wave your hands in her face, get her to take the headphones off so that you can tell her she's cute.
That'll make friends and influence people.
Yeah, and people were saying, how dumb is this guy? And then there was a running gag of how to talk to a woman wearing headphones were there. And then the same day, there was a story about picking up signals from the star HD 164595 that may be aliens.
Which turned out to be human signals that bounced.
Which turned out to be like noise from a motor.
So basically, that's
combining those two things.
You combine two completely junk culture tidbits into an incomprehensible tweet.
Well, this is it.
And that's exactly what I don't want about Twitter.
This is exactly what Twitter's like. So I thought 10 people would get this joke. You know, I thought it would be funny to you know, people who were following feminist Twitter and sci-fi, whatever. And a million people have seen it and it's been shared, whatever.
And that gives you a good feeling.
Well, it gave me a good feeling in that I now have a great list of female scientists to follow, because they were the basic ones who were sharing.
Yeah, they knew about that meme.
Because they knew about the meme, and they like Jodie Foster, and they knew about the meme. So I've followed probably 1,000 people who shared this now, probably maybe more.
And then you followed it up with how to talk to a woman wearing AirPods, be in a parallel London with Zeppelins, and upgrade people to Cybermen. For some reason, that only got retweeted once and 3 hearts.
Yeah.
Yeah, there you go. Well, that was it was a week later.
Plus, Twitter is like.
And also, people didn't get the. maybe people didn't.
I love it that you love this and you find this valuable. But it's one reason why I don't miss Twitter at all.
Yep. But that's one of the things that fascinates me about it is you can have a tweet like that that will go completely viral and thousands of people will share it. And then you can have one that's arguably better or more intelligent or and no one will click on it. It's completely random. It's like the time of day or what memes are going around or one person shares it who's got a lot of followers and then other people see it that way. I've had two or three where that's happened and it's been shared, you know, 150,000 times. And I have no idea what differentiates that from the other ones that get like 10 clicks.
But that's true of all media. No, all media has that power of distribution. And, you know, anything you publish, you'll have this like skewed distribution of people reading it. And Twitter just...
well, and I wonder how much the algorithm is involved as well, though, right? Twitter...
Well, it's a little bit now.
Yeah.
It's a little bit involved, but that's part of what I was saying in the article as well. There's a feedback loop in that stuff that's shared gets more shared because if it's retweeted, then more people see it and more people like to retweet it and then they're more likely to like it or whatever. And so that signal spreads out. It does amplify it more, but it's at its core, it is driven by people. So that the part of the power of Twitter is that ability for it to sift through the global meme space and all of us as individuals being synapses in that meme brain sharing this stuff out further and making it come to the top. And so part of the reason they put trending topics and the other bits at the top of Twitter is to say, look, we found this interesting stuff. And things can take off and spawn out of that. And they're not predictable things. They can be, mine's a small ripple compared to some of the things that take off on Twitter, but there have been big things that do take off. And that mechanism is a powerful thing. But it also means that that combined with the way app replies work is a bit of a problem. Because it means if you do spawn something like that, then you get a bunch of people who think, well, A, you get a bunch of idiots who make the same joke back to you or explain to you or do something worse. B, you get people who are going to be abusive to you because you're suddenly a big target and you're not geared up for it. If you're not verified, you're not marked as a famous person, you don't have as many tools to damp that stuff down.
Well, I have to say, I would be nervous about getting a lot of retweets because that pretty much guarantees that you are going to now start
getting trolls, vituperation,
and
So they've one of the things that has changed. They just released it when I wrote this, but they've now got a thing that they've got a quality filter they turn on by default, so it won't notify you about.
I know, and I've turned that off because that otherwise I won't see people who are doing damaging trolling. What is that? What good is that to? I've never understood what Twitter's attitude is. We'll just block it. Implies that the trolling is only damaging to you, or something you should see. Mm-hmm. But in fact, it could be much, much more damaging. We have there's one idiot troll we have out there who tweets all using at replies, every one of our sponsors. And I have to see that because I will hear from the sponsors if I don't quash it. So, he's trying to put us out of business. So, how does it help me if I don't see it? It doesn't help me at all. In fact, the only reason I see Twitter is because I have alerts that let me know that he's at it again. So I can go in and get his account suspended, which I do two or three times a day now.
I think
that's
I don't
fun.
Know,
but,
I don't know whether Kevin would agree, but I think part of why Twitter got to where it is now is that in the early going, the company was very fixated on
growth,
allowing speech. No, not just growth.
Free speech. Yes.
Right.
Yes.
But allowing speech of all kinds and being the free speech wing of the free speech party.
Right.
And those sorts of things. So their default was to allow speech. And that has value, obviously, for a whole bunch of reasons. But I think it stopped them from thinking about the things that they could have done to stop that sort of trolling earlier.
Life is too short to read Twitter.
Well, of course, you can't read all of it, but part of the point is public stuff.
I'm too old to waste my time on this absolute drivel. Even the best stuff is drivel.
You know what's fascinating is one of my daughters is obsessed with Twitter. She's on it all the time. She's 18.
She thinks she's going to live forever.
Yeah. She got mad at me because I did what Kevin described. I retweeted one of her tweets because I thought it was funny.
Oh, interesting.
And she's And she said, why did you do that? You ruined my life. And
interesting.
And I said, what are you talking about? I thought it was funny, so I shared it. And she said, yeah, my phone started blowing up with all these, you know, mentions and at strangers. Replies and morons. And she said, please don't do that again.
Isn't that? But that's very intelligent of her. Yeah, so and maybe Twitter's better if you're under the radar. I don't know.
Yeah. Well, but I think she feels that way.
Yeah.
But the other thing, I mean, you can still use it in that way. You can still use it as a place to talk to your friends and so on. But a lot of its power is this amplification. But so there's several aspects to this. One is, yes, you're right. You hiding it from yourself is not really enough. You want it to be that if you say this person is blocked, everyone else who goes to your page doesn't see those. So the default is that the idiot can scribble on your wall and everyone will see it. And for the people who follow the idiot, that's probably okay. But for by default, if you've blocked them, why should they be showing up on your wall? That's a sort of control of your space issue. So that would be something that...
Well, and this guy shows up on the wall of every sponsor. And many sponsors aren't sophisticated enough to recognize trolling. So then we have to talk to them. I mean, Twitter is facilitating one person who wants to put me out of business. And they do it, there's nothing I can do to stop it. Is that a good thing? No, I think the sooner Twitter goes out of business, the better for the world. I think.
No, I disagree with that.
Twitter has been
I would disagree.
Twitter has been.
Twitter is a force for good.
Oh God, I totally disagree.
I wouldn't go that far.
I think you will come around. I think in a couple of years you will come around and realize that Twitter has actually been a very damaging to the.
I disagree.
I think the
things that make Twitter good and bad are it's just like the internet. The same things that make it good
are the
things that make it bad.
Well, I'm interested because Aaron, you had the reaction to when I said that I thought was interesting, which is I feel like maybe I personally and maybe others will be moving into a post social media world. I'm ready to do it. I am kind of done.
Yeah, exactly. I feel the same way. And part of it's just because I'm busy with tons of stuff going on. And it's hard to pay attention to all that, especially Twitter, because it's at this person, at this person, at this person, at this person. And at the end of it, it says, sounds good. Okay. That was helpful. So for me, a lot of my Twitter angst is just the fact that it's just not usable for me. I can't share what I want to share. I can't give a longer description that I want to give or answer somebody's question. It's really hard for me to answer questions on Twitter. And so finally, I just say, could you private message me your email, right, and I'll be glad to help you out, but I can't do it through Twitter.
Interestingly, Google Plus was actually a perfect platform for that, but it failed.
A perfect platform.
But why did it fail? Yep.
Well, because they were late to the game and they couldn't attract the audience and the users.
Or maybe this is Twitter is what we want.
No.
I think it's what some people want.
No. It's not what I want.
I think Twitter's strengths outweigh its weaknesses. Yeah. I know it has lots of weaknesses.
Its strength is that it is a web-like space. I think you're right there, Matthew. And that's one of the reasons I like it, because I like web-like spaces. But the other thing that... there's the first order effect of the app notifying you and annoying you. The other thing that's slightly odd about it is that because it amplifies this anger, it also seems that when you go and look there, the most likely thing you are to see is something angry by someone who's got more followers than you, or who has his tweets more popular than yours. And it's like the my friends are having a better time than me problem with Facebook, which is that you only see the happy things that get lots of likes. On Twitter, you only see the ones that gather lots of reactions. And because they amplify the bad reactions, you tend to see a lot of anger as well. So it becomes normative that Twitter is the place you go to shout at people. Mm-hmm. And there's some value to that in terms of if you're complaining about the government or politicians, or even if some company has messed you about and you want to shout at them and then wake up their customer service team. There's value for that for the individual and even potentially for the people on the other side of it. But it goes very wrong when it's targeted at another individual, and when it's a normative thing that, as you say, this guy can go around and shout at you and shout at your advertisers, and there's very little you can do about it. So there's a structural problem there because it amplifies that shouting.
And it is a structural characters, problem. The 140 characters amplifies the problem as well, because you can't. Yes. There's no room for nuance. You have to compose something that's more or less like a bumper sticker or a T-shirt slogan. So
Oscar Wilde would have loved Twitter.
Yeah, and so people who do that well. particularly the ones I follow who are part of weird Twitter or funny Twitter.
Yeah, there's great stuff.
Some of them are hilarious.
Yeah.
Because they've refined that to an art form. But unfortunately, it also encourages people to distort things and to sort of make announcements or pronouncements that are kind of true, but not really, because there's no room to kind of go into depth.
Well,
And those don't get any retweets anyway. So
yeah, but don't you feel like you're more misunderstood on Twitter than on any other social platform because of that?
Definitely.
I mean,
I
have to explain things, and it's like, no, that's not what I meant. I just didn't have enough room to fully explain what I was talking about, and it drives me bananas. Trying to have to it's then you have to go back. Oh, that's not what I meant. I meant this, and then it's like you know, I could have avoided. I spent so much time dealing with this. I could have avoided the whole thing.
Well,
all of my
like
stuff goes
messaging.
Out to Twitter, by the way. I like to use it. I like people to follow me wherever they want to or whatever they're comfortable with. But I don't like to use it. It's my least favorite social network.
It's like trying to communicate, you know, complicated concepts through text messaging. So you text someone, they text you back. It's good for things like, hey, where should we meet up? Or, you know, I saw this cool thing. But it's not good for having long discussions.
Right.
In fact, it makes those worse. So if you're having a disagreement with somebody, texting is the worst possible thing. And Twitter is probably the second worst possible thing. And I remember my wife saying to our daughter, she was having this text fight with somebody. She said, get off your phone and call the person or go over there.
Yes.
Because texting and social media is a great place to start a fight. It's not a great place to stop a fight or to reach an understanding.
Well, and the lack of nuance in text really can actually create fights, I've found.
Misunderstandings.
And
totally.
Yeah. That is kind of, with my friends, that's our rule now is say it in person, because you lose a lot of nuance on that.
So I have a good quote from Jack, which I've stuck somewhere.
I saw that, and actually, is I wonder, because it's also in Fast Company, if this is Jack's response to you, or if it's, is it related? You can only express yourself, he says, if you feel safe to do so. You need a sense of, is this in the context of what he wants Twitter to become?
Yes. So
we're not a social network as people think about it, he says. And
this is quite a long discussion of what Twitter's up to, but that piece I thought was interesting, because he's basically recognizing that there is this problem with people not feeling safe because they get so shouted at, and they need to fix that, and they're working on that. So that's an encouraging thing.
There's other issues too. I mean, half of my Twitter followers are not real; they're spam.
Mm-hmm.
And I would say that's true of a lot of especially true of people with high follower accounts. And I think that what you're going to see soon is an exodus from Twitter. People are being fooled right now. They think they're talking to 37 million people when they don't realize that 15 million of those are not even people.
I think you've actually started to see it already.
Yeah, I think there's already an exodus going on. I think it's going to snowball.
Yeah, there has been, but Twitter is going to need to rebuild that sense of conversation that it can be at its best, and
it's hard to go back, as Google learned. Once people start abandoning you, it's hard to convince them to come back. They're doing all these streaming things too. They've just announced that Twitter is going to be on Apple TV. I don't want to. The last place I want to do is sit and watch at Twitter on my big screen TV.
Yeah, it doesn't feel like they want to focus on those things, because there's not enough return to it. They'd rather cut a deal with the NFL or the NBA and stream clips of shows, because that's where the money is. There's no money in making it a more appealing community for people to
interesting.
Chat.
Yeah.
No, but the reason Twitter is valuable for the TV stuff is that it's, and that's where the back channel does make some sense. If you've got a shared conversation about something, that can make more sense, and you can make that stuff cohere. And it was the thing that got me back watching live television. Was the sense that there will be a conversation about it on Twitter that I would want to see at the same time. In the same way that we have a chat room here, who are watching us and talking about us, being able to have that for a broadcast show is powerful. So I stayed up to the middle of the night to watch the Royal Wedding, because I knew the British Twitter would be really funny.
There are times when Twitter shines. So, I'm not denying that.
So there's a coherence to that strategy that does make some sense. But
they're basically mining all the content people have put into Twitter to create kind of this zeitgeisty feed of information and news. I guess that's a way to monetize it.
But it's also, you know, it's also the place that you go to talk about the thing that's happening now.
Right.
Facebook has like a half day lag about that stuff. You won't be having a conversation about what's just happened on Facebook because it takes a while to bubble through the system there. But with Twitter, you can have a conversation about what just happened. If it's a news event or if it's a, you know, if it's the Emmys or the Grammys or whatever it is, or even if it's just a TV show that happens to be airing, and you're, you know, this happens more in the UK than it does here, because here the TV shows are all spaced out over 3-hour gaps. But in the UK, when Great British Bake Off is on, Twitter is talking about Great British Bake Off, and then when Top of the Pops comes on, Twitter is talking about Top of the Pops. And the subset you see will be the subset of Britons that you follow, and maybe the ones that they retweet if they see some funnier ones. And it does work as this like parallel conversation stream about what it is you're watching.
And so I think it is good for those things. It's not so good when you're trying to have a nuanced political discussion.
I try to avoid political discussions personally.
Well, there's another reason to get off Twitter, right?
Actually, bars aren't any good for that either. So it's not just Twitter.
People often do raise the Arab Spring as an example of Twitter at its best. I think you can clearly point to Trump's ascendancy as an example of Twitter at its worst. I think he is the perfect person for that medium. And I think that's an indictment of Twitter. I mean, if you want to get political.
He certainly knows how to use it.
He knows how to use it better than anybody I've ever seen. And in fact, it's a shame because his handlers are bowdlerizing his Twitter. And the handler's tweets are not interesting in the least. They're horrible. Well, they're boring.
Did the analysis and they
When you see it on Android late night, that's the real Donald Trump. When you see it daytime and it's hashtags and it's, you know, it's campaign. There's a clear difference. Yeah.
But they did a linguistic analysis and found that they were different as well.
Oh, yeah. The words used and so forth.
Yeah.
And I think the campaign, whatever you think about Trump, the campaign is completely misguided. They should let Trump be Trump. And that's what he should be on Twitter. They shouldn't be trying to, because then you get this weird disjoint where, no, that's him. Or that's not him. That's on the same feed. Let Trump be Trump.
He was the first sort of major politician, I would say, that how you can use Twitter.
But
it's all about perception.
His whole life.
It's not about reality.
Twitter was almost made for this person.
For him.
His whole life has been about self-aggrandizement, promotion. Reality shows were made for him, too. This is where he shines.
And I think he understands it's all about the pronouncement and the sort of...
You can say anything you want on Twitter.
Nobody has nothing to do with whether it's true or not true. Yeah. No one's going to notice or care. You're still going to get lots of, you know, activity, and then everyone will be writing about the thing that you said, even when it isn't true.
And by the way, that's where amplification is powerful too, because I think if you look at how many votes Trump got in his nomination process, it's still not a huge number of people. It's very easy on Twitter to appear to be huge. It because it's such a great amplifier. Anyway, so there's good and there's bad. I agree, and I think the bad outweighs the good, in my opinion. But to each his own. I'm less Facebook is not that interesting either. I'm less and less interested in social media in general.
Do you interact with your friends online?
Well, the thing that breaks my heart is people ask me questions on Twitter all the time. There is, you know, people, listeners and viewers that want to interact with me. I just choose not to use that medium to interact.
It's in your super there. Look.
It's what?
It's in your super.
Well, I didn't put it there.
How do you interact with them?
I don't. Because I can't. Mm. Yeah, my Google Plus is too. You should just take those out. long ago I said I stopped responding to email as well. Same reason. If you got several hundred email messages a day asking things like, well, which phone should I buy? You would stop answering email too. You can't reasonably handle that. I'd have to hire a team just to do that. And it's just as bad on any other platform as well. Twitter I was able to do for a while because, it was a small number of people that used it. It still is. But it's not a very good place to do it. I prefer to do it in public because that way I could share, at least others could
do it. Do it on your own site.
Yeah, I should start figuring out some way to do it on a blog or something like that. Yeah.
If so, I've got a question. If this group, the four of us, were going to build the ideal social network, the one that would take over the world and be exactly how we want it, what would we include in that social media tool? What would we include and what would we not include based on what we know about Facebook, Twitter, and Google Plus? Because I think there was a lot of good in Google Plus.
You know, I actually think there was too. I really had high hopes for Google Plus.
I did too. I loved it.
And there were a lot of good things about it. It was great looking. It was good, especially for things like photography. I know a bunch of photographers who used it a lot.
Yeah.
But it just, you know,
Trey
you can't
Ratcliffe
start late.
Has abandoned it. I mean,
you can't start how good you are.
Yeah.
I mean, dozens of people have started great things long after the not so great thing got going, and network effects just kill you every time.
Yeah.
But you know, there are other things that have taken off and have got different characteristics to them. So,
what would the perfect social network? I think that's a great question. What would be the perfect social network?
I don't think you can have one.
Yeah.
I don't think you can have.
I think they have different flavors. Yeah.
I tried GNU Social for a while. I really like the idea of it being, you know, only like hardcore geeks. But the only people I only see Cory Doctorow there. It's a great place to follow.
Yeah, once you follow Cory Doctorow, they will appear. Yeah,
yeah.
And that's a proxy thing of him as well. That's his feed.
Well, that's the problem. You could tell it's not him. He's not there.
Which was the thing that went wrong with Buzz.
Yep. And that's why Google did not create a right API for Google Plus. They learned that lesson on Buzz.
Yeah.
Right, but that also made it problematic.
Made it worse. Yeah.
Yeah,
there was no way to get stuff into it.
Right, and that's actually what my top of my list is a good API. I think they need to have a good API, well documented API. It's easy to use, allows people to do what they want to do with it. It's difficult to do a good API, but I think that's top of the list.
You know, what's the problem with all these things?
I think that could have changed Google Plus.
Raise his hand.
Yes,
that is exactly what IndieWeb is about. I mean, it's about running the APIs that let us do those kinds of things. Yeah. So we've got the MicroPub API to allow you to publish that you can then publish out to different sites.
Yeah.
And we've got the WebMention model that lets the site say, I've linked to you over here. So you can work out what that link means, whether it's a like or a follow or a comment or RSVP or whatever.
Yeah.
So we've got the models for doing that. So we've got the API stuff. But the challenge is always, it's still you've got to work out how to follow people and give yourself a feed of things and then decide what to see it. Then you've got to balance out how crowded that feed gets versus how quiet it is. And that's a very hard and subtle thing to get right.
Mm-hmm. And
we have all these tools.
The whole thing with circles and including certain people in certain circles was a great idea.
Undoable.
Because you could keep, you know, these folks who all only wanted that content in this circle, and you could keep people who wanted other things in this circle, but it just was too labor intensive, I think. It was a great idea, but it just took too much fiddling.
Yep. So it's got to be dead simple to use. I mean, I think of like Instagram and Snapchat and those things that have kind of disrupted, even though there was existing platforms there, they've kind of disrupted and got in there and been successful. I think the network effect is very powerful, as you said, Matthew, but I think it can be overcome with the right tool.
Right. You're right. Yeah.
Instagram's a great example.
I mean,
Instagram exactly. I think we're on one thing,
right? It was just share a photo. The end.
Right.
That's literally it.
Right. See, my solution to this probably isn't the right one. I would try to take all these good things, put them into one platform, a new social media platform, and try to get everybody to use it, which probably wouldn't work. You'd probably have to specialize, as some of these other platforms have done. Otherwise, as you say, you never overcome the network effect, unfortunately.
And I think if you look at what Snapchat has done, what's fascinating about it is nothing like what it started as. So, so they were very smart, I think, in starting with one specific really, really small functionality, disappearing messages. And that, I think, served a huge need that was not being served, that ephemerality. You didn't have to worry about your Instagram photo or your Facebook post, you know, living on forever and ever. So you could be a little more free, a little more open with what you posted. And there wasn't so much pressure. And they've gradually added things to it to the point where it's now this fairly robust kind of media entity. How long they'll be able to do that, I don't know. But that's an interesting strategy to start with one tiny little feature.
I mean, you know,
I don't know why we always get in this conversation. I don't want to get in this conversation. But
LeoNet, that's what we need. LeoNet.
Yeah. I think the problem with social networks is people.
Yeah.
They're made of people. And most people are great. I love people. But there are enough. All it takes is, you know, these few horrible
people.
I used
to say I like certain people specifically. I don't like people in general.
Oh, yeah. There you go. all right. Let's take a break and move on. We can talk about Amazon. Yeah, I like people. I'd hang with you anytime, Matthew. I would hang with you, Kevin Marks. I do hang with you, Aaron Newcomb. Yep. I'm not against people. Just some people. and I think really human beings are not. I think part of the problem is biologically we're not made for this kind of environment. This is too many people. Mm. I'm not sure I buy the Dunbar number of 150, but I think we can handle a smaller number of actual relationships. You know, I've always fought this notion because this is what everybody, you know, who hated the internet said, but I'm starting to come around.
So me following 10,000 people on Twitter is a bad idea?
I think I followed close to that number. but I don't, you know, who knows? I don't, it's no fun. All the fun's gone out of it, as they said in Of Mice and Men. Our show today, this is fun, is brought to you by a better internet. A better internet would be nice, wouldn't you? How many of you have Wi-Fi that doesn't work? Or a router that kind of stops working and you have to reboot it? How many of you are suffering with buffering? Are moaning about dead zones? Wouldn't you like Wi-Fi that works? You need this. This changed my life. I actually was not... I tried everything. I tried repeaters. I had power line repeaters. I had massive routers. I got a second internet connection. I did everything. And then along comes Eero, E-E-R-O, and everything just works again. So instead of the single router model, Eero is a mesh system throughout your house. One or more, it doesn't have to be just one, but one or more of these Eero devices, they look like a white Apple TV. They're about the same size. They have a power connector, two Ethernet connectors, and a USB connector on each and every one. You can, if you want, wire all three, and then they'll get in a mesh with each other and work with each other. Or the way I have it, I have one base station, and then I use the Eero app on iPhone or Android to add additional stations, you know, at problem spots. Suddenly, my whole house has the fastest Wi-Fi I have ever had. There are no more dead zones. There's no buffering. No buffering suffering. It's Wi-Fi that works. It's kind of an enterprise-grade Wi-Fi system. You can set it up very quickly. I hate to use that term because I think it'll scare people. It is very easy to use. Gives you all the power you want. WPA encryption, automatic. You can't not use it. I like that. It's very easy to manage it using the Eero app. And the Eero app does some really interesting things. For instance, I've got a current bandwidth test that's always being updated, so I know what I'm getting. It's kind of slow right now. Must be something going on in the network. Thank you, Comcast. I can see what devices are on there by name. I can actually rename them. I can reserve. I can do port forwarding. A lot of the fancy stuff. The other thing that Eero does that's really interesting is it keeps track of the devices. It knows that that's a Roku, for instance. They optimize the network for the device that's attached to the network. So that's really cool. They also are pushing firmware updates on a regular basis. You don't have to worry about it. It's automatically updated. And it looks great in the house. I mean, I don't have to hide these. I have them all over the house because there's no antennas sticking out. It's very straightforward. And because it has two Ethernet ports, you can connect it to your cable modem, as I have, and then to a switch or a hub and allow yourself to have many, many, many more devices hardwired as well as wireless. All I can say is This solved a multi-year problem with bad Wi-Fi in our house, and you cannot pry the Eero out of my hands anymore. In fact, maybe I'll take this box home and add some more of them. That's the other thing. You can continue to add Eeros as your needs expand. We've got free overnight shipping for you if you visit Eero, Eero.com, and select overnight shipping. Use the offer code TWIG, Eero.com, offer code TWIG right now. Eero, it is an end the buffering suffering with Eero. Big fan. Really, really big fan. You know what else I'm a big fan with? My Echoes. And the Echo Dot is back. And folks, it's $50. I think competition is going to be great because we're going to see the Google Home soon. Sonos has announced it's going to work with Echo. At $50, this is a great deal. The reason you want the Dot is because it binds pairs by Bluetooth or hardwire to a better speaker. So this is kind of the top of the Echo without the speaker. The Echo speaker is fine for voice and for talking to, but if you're going to use it for music, you want a better speaker on it. So I have this paired by Bluetooth to a nice set of powered speakers. $50 means I can put more of these in the house. I love the Echo Dot. It, along with the Echo Tap and, of course, the original Echo, are huge sellers for Amazon. $90, a little expensive. At $50, wow, I'm impressed. And apparently, Amazon is also responding to Google Home. We've heard that one of the things Google Home will do is give you notifications. A nice, at least in the video, a little polite chime when a Google Now notification pops up, and you can ask the Google Home, what's that for? Amazon is, according to The Verge, to Circuit Breaker, Chris Welch, bringing spoken notifications similarly to the Echo. Let's give credit where credit's due. This is from Jessica Lessons. Very good information. But that's behind a paywall, so I pay for it. But if you don't, you might want to read The Verge's article. Any thoughts?
So this is just a peripheral for the main one. It doesn't work on its own.
The Dot can work by itself. It's just exactly the same. It just doesn't have its own full-size speaker. It's a little speaker. And if
I can buy this and shout it, and it'll find me things.
Oh, yeah. It's exactly the same. Okay. It's just if you cut the top, if you slice the top off of the Echo. And the reason I like it is because you can have better speakers, because I use the Echo for music a lot.
Right.
Yeah. But I think notifications would be very interesting. There's going to be, I love it. There's going to be a fight. Mm-hmm. There's going to be a competition. And that's good news, because I think that this idea of speaking to your house has legs. By the way, if you want it, Echo will also read you a Twitter feed. just to circle around 180 degrees. You can get Twitter on your Echo as well.
Yeah, I'm interested to see what sort of Google Home.
I am too.
I'm really interested in how they play it because I think there's so much potential there. They've got so much intelligence in that company, and they've got so many, you know, other Google services, if you're like me, that you use, just to be able to integrate some obvious things with that and with voice and with, you know, a sort of Google Now type. I'm really looking forward to it.
I'm surprised they haven't already. And I think that Google's Achilles heel here is that they haven't been very good about their own devices, about doing their own devices, making their own devices. Even when they partner with other companies, sometimes it doesn't pan out very well. And so I think I'm with you. I wish they would have done this years ago. I've been chomping at the bit for Google to come out and say, mm-hmm. "Okay, here's your intelligent light switch." And you know, they have Nest, so they have some intelligent thermostats and smoke detectors and things. But
Nest, I think, was kind of a train wreck, right? I mean, yeah, in a lot of ways.
And that's Tony Fidel's fault, I think.
Yeah.
Did you know Tony, Kevin Marks? I feel like you might have worked with Tony Fidel at some point. No, you're muted, by the way. Oh, I know, because there was a plane going over.
A plane going over. I muted myself. Sorry. I didn't know Tony Fidel. And it's Internet of Things is another one of those ones that seems to have had a lot of like hype, and now everyone's going, "What was that about?" And in some ways, the Echo is a more compelling random piece of hardware stuck in the house than light switches and doorbells and smoke detectors and things.
I think it's the big benefit, at least talking to people who love their Echoes, is just the idea of a smart device. So it's not just a single, you know, a light switch or a light bulb or your oven. It's a something you can talk to, something that can read you things, something that can turn the music on, something that can tell you what the temperature is, someone that can tell you who was starred in that movie that you can't remember. I mean, those things have value. The real key is can you do it consistently?
Yeah. But who could do it better than Google, right?
Right.
Which is why it's puzzling that Amazon owns this space, I guess just from a vacuum, filling a vacuum. Yeah. Although I think Amazon pointed the way. Maybe Google didn't really know how to handle this until they saw
it. But it seems so, you know, when they came out with that sort of Echo-looking Wi-Fi hub.
Oh, the thing. On hub. Yeah, that's what they up to, right?
I thought, obviously, that's a Trojan horse. Right, mm-hmm. That's what they're going to do with it. They're going to turn on and then
zippity-doo.
Literally.
Yeah. that is Achilles' heel for Google, I have to say.
It is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, there's a couple of things here. The thing that Google has that makes sense to me in this context is the Chromecast. If you can combine those two, I think that's strong. And and Amazon has the Fire TV as well, but I'm not sure they have them work together.
Look what Echo is doing with Sonos. So you'll be able to say to Echo, play Frank Sinatra in the living room, and it'll know which speaker. That's exactly what Google should be doing.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Right. If you could say, play this week in
on
Google.
On my TV.
TV, yeah. And I've got a Chromecast.
And they did demo. I believe they demoed that at Google I.O. That was one of the features. Yeah.
And it makes perfect sense. And if it can, you know, it doesn't take long for it to work out where the different gadgets are, and that works too.
And I love the Chromecast. I've been using that for...
I just worry that it will be a fragment, as IoT has been all along, a fragmented world where nothing talks to anything else very well, and it's a pain. Yeah. Or to get things to talk, you have to really go to extra effort and really become a true geek.
Or buy them all from one company, so you need to buy the Amazon.
Right. Well, we know that's going to be the case. There's no way Amazon's going to talk to Google, Google's going to talk to Apple. They're all going to be siloed. Inevitably, that's the world we live in now, which is why I support indie web, because... silos are bad for users. They're good for companies, bad for users.
It's so frustrating. Look at your iPhone can't just call other iPhones, right? I'm sure Apple would love that to be the case. But
Well, their messaging is just like that, and they're beefing it up, and you can't use it with anybody.
So we're actually going backwards. Instant messenger couldn't talk to my instant messenger. It's so frustrating.
So the other one that's relevant to this was the story about the speech generation that top of the running order. Did you listen to that stuff, Leo? I thought that was impressive.
Let's play it right now. This is where?
Top of the running order, the DeepMind link.
DeepMind. Oh, I'm not sure I want to talk to DeepMind. Now I'm nervous. So DeepMind is
the
Go playing computer, right?
Yes. Okay. So it's the London-based AI company. They did the Go playing computer. And they've just been applying the same kind of recurrent neural networks to speech understanding and generation.
Mm-hmm. So this is going to be better speech generation.
Yeah. So they built this model that is looks at the audio at multiple scales at once. And so it's like a layered model of the audio where it spans out over time. And then they feed stuff into it and see what it comes out with. And... They measurably got better text to speech than the existing text to speech they have there.
Listen
to the three.
Tell me parametric, concatenative, and WaveNet. These are different ways of using AI.
There's different ways of generating speech. So parametric is having something that you give it a bunch of like a synthesizer model, and you give it a bunch of parameters, and it plays it that way.
Okay, let's play that.
The Blue Lagoon is a 1980 American romance and adventure film directed by Randall Kleiser.
Okay, it sounds just like Google Now. Probably how Google Now is doing it, right?
Concatenative is we take a lot of samples and join them together. So you record someone's voice.
Also what a lot of systems, including Google Now, use.
The Blue Lagoon is a 1980 American romance and adventure film directed by Randall Kleiser.
So that is not fully synthesized. Those are real samples, but stitched together.
Yes, with a bit of nuance.
And this is the AI.
This is the AI one.
The Blue Lagoon is a 1980 American romance and adventure film directed by Randall Kleiser.
Oh, screw it. I'm out of work.
That did sound pretty good.
That sounds just like a human.
Yeah. So basically, they build a model. They just feed it raw audio samples, and it builds this hidden model.
Oh, crap.
And then they put words into it. Their words come out. So
I have there's enough audio recorded of me that's fully available, freely available on the internet. There are hundreds of thousands of hours of me. That would be more than enough for them to create a Leo.
Yeah, but they needed something. I think the training set they gave it had – It's in the white paper, but it was like 160 voices.
We could play a game, human or computer.
Yeah.
It all sounds like Chinese to me. I don't know. So how many samples do they need?
Let me find it. Hang on. So
you could create your own and then just.
So if they train the network without a text
speech, 109 speakers.
Well, that's
for
nothing.
Speech.
That's nothing.
Not much. At all. Yeah.
So in other words, if I just gave, they could easily do it with me. Most of our stuff is Creative Commons. They can do it. Here we go.
So if you go down a bit further, they have.
This is babbling. You want to hear some babbling?
This is weird.
Jag står till man på den platsen när ni sitter och tittar ut den fönstren där går kunder till oss.
You know, do you remember, you might not be old enough to remember, there was a guy in the 40s who appeared in many movies. He was a double talk expert.
Yes.
And he would talk and it would sound like he was saying something, but he wasn't. And that's what this sounds like.
There's lots of words that came into
it. It sounds like speech.
Yeah, well, this is what my French sounds like. It's nothing. It just sounds like it.
But that's just what happens if they just let it, they don't give it any signal, it just generates stuff.
But they've got human sounds. They've got breathing, they've got lip smacking, they've got not incandescence, they've got you know what I mean. They've got.
Yeah, prosody.
Yeah. So now, these are different voices, same thing, let's see.
The avocado is a pear-shaped fruit with leathery skin, smooth edible flesh, and a large stone.
That sounds a little mechanical.
The avocado is a pear-shaped fruit with leathery skin, smooth edible flesh, and a large stone.
Oh.
The avocado is a pear-shaped fruit with leathery skin, smooth edible flesh, and a large stone.
I think I'm in love.
The avocado is a pear-shaped fruit with leathery skin, smooth edible flesh, and a large stone.
Wow. Interesting.
The second one sounded the best.
The second one?
Mm-hmm.
The avocado is a pear-shaped fruit with leathery skin, smooth edible flesh, and a large stone.
You know what? That's just personal taste because I like this
guy. The avocado is a pear-shaped fruit with leathery skin, smooth edible flesh, and a large stone.
She sounds cuter.
Right. So that isn't a phrase any of those speakers said.
I think
They trained it on these 106 speakers of the 44 hours from a corpus sample they had.
Wow.
So part of what it's reproducing is also the recording quality. You can actually hear the differences in miking there as well.
Here's music. They can also do it with music. So this is this is the same thing, without any information.
This is not the babbling, but
the babbling, music, music babbling. Yeah, it's kind of like John Cage.
Yeah.
It's very John Cagey. Okay. And then I presume that they could then give it instruction. Although, I love the idea of the computer kind of writing, doing its own composition.
Well, it depends on the integration window. So they've said it's only got a fairly short integration window where it jumps about a bit. And they said they could tune it to have a longer integration window so it could generate like a 4-minute piece or something like that.
I think we're not far off from Scarlett Johansson, frankly.
No, the thing that's impressive about this is that it gives the promise of very good text-to-speech, but it also gives the promise of being able to replicate someone else's voice fairly accurately. Mm-hmm. So, certainly your voice will be straightforward to do because you've given them lots of samples. The other weird thing is that it will only be what they've got recordings of, so it will be people in their stagiest, most recorded voice. But if it's an actor, this will be a way to recreate an actor. The other thing is that you may be able to do, depending on how they tune it, to have one person's voice perform another's voice. So take the cadence of one person and then feed that into another one. So it's very interesting. And again, it's like a lot of this AI stuff. They're not choosing what the model is, they're letting it form its own model of what the speech is in the same way that our brains do. And clearly it's at the point where it's doing interesting stuff. So this, this ties back to the Alexa thing. in that if it can talk like this, it can talk a lot better than the existing ones. Mm-hmm. And the other part will be that it may be better at doing the way the current ones fall down is with proper names, is that they don't have enough information to render them well. So there may be some ability to do that better. But it's this was actually fascinating to me, because this is very impressive piece of, you know, something coming to fruition.
We knew this would happen. It's just, it's pretty, yeah, pretty interesting.
Are they using all the data they get from Google Voice?
Not in this case, no. This was research projects, so they used some existing data sets, but they certainly could. I mean, they could, you know, it's Google. They could feed the whole of YouTube through it and see what that gave them.
So here is Al Kelly, who's the Double Talk guy on Ernie Kovacs, very early TV show.
I know you are all aware
TV show
of the great coverage that is being done by NBC on the convention.
By the way, this could be today, by the way. This is Ernie Kovacs. Yeah.
We'll continue, of course, and all of the highlights will be brought to you. I know you've read a great deal about what is happening at the convention, but I'm sure that you would be interested in the technical end. We have with us tonight NBC's Chief Engineer Pellman.
So this guy did many, many movies over the years, and it's actually pretty good.
Pellman, I know that the technical end may seem a little boring, but I'm sure that you can make it simple enough for all of us to grasp just how the cameras will be handled at the convention that NBC has planned. What is the planning for NBC with the cameras at the convention?
Well, Mr. Clyde, I'm very happy to say this. Now, NBC is not only taking every technical angle, which is going about to bring every convention news of face in every hotel, new corner prize, or wherever there's been a face, to give the people a knowledge of what has caused, with a cause, but also to say, and they will find that is the way for a safe car.
I love it. I'm sorry. Okay, just enough. I just had to play a little bit of it.
That's a little bit like the turbo encabulator.
Yeah, it's so good. I had mentioned several times after we heard that Android N was going to be Nougat. I'll say Nougat for your benefit, Kevin Marks. I don't want to offend your ear. Nougat for those of us in the United States. And I mentioned that when I was a kid, I remember going to a town in France that was famous for nougat. Well, it is. It's called Montélimar. In fact, if you know the Beatles song, Sweet Tangerine, Montélimar, this is the famous French nougat town. And Google's going there. It's only 35,000 people in southeast France. It's the world capital of nougat. And Google is going to celebrate with Google France and the Montélimar City Council. Are going to have a big party on the 21st. All things nougat will be on display, plus bug droid green cocktails, a buffet of local organic foods and activities for the kid. But most importantly, Google is going to donate an Android statue for permanent display in Montélimar.
Wow. I'm sure the French are very happy about that.
Yeah, I don't think they like Google that much. So,
no.
But I remember going there when I was a kid. And, you know, that's the kind of thing that makes a lasting impression.
So it's nougat? Is it supposed to be nougat?
Nougat.
They also say nougat. Schedule aluminum.
And tissue.
Well, how do Canadians say it?
Say what?
Nougat.
Nougat.
Okay. Unless you're in Montreal, then they probably say nougat.
Yeah.
Yeah. I say delicious. Are you all loving nougat on your new on your Nexus phones? Are you happy with it?
Well, I've had it for several months. I like it.
I think, you know, this, and I'm seeing this with iOS 10, we're really at the point where it's hard to make a major difference.
Yeah. Yeah. It is hard.
Yeah. We're kind of...
I mean, the replies in notifications and things like that are good.
Yeah.
The ability to for them to respond directly in there. The app switching is good when I remember to use it. But yeah, otherwise it's just another version of Android that works better. But there's no like world-shaking part to it, really.
Yeah.
So you guys are running the dev preview?
Because no, I noticed
you had a Nexus 6, right?
I've been running the dev preview because...
Oh, it's not out for the Nexus 6.
Google bricked my phone with the previous upgrade, and the way to fix it was to install the Nougat. So.
I think we have the full one, a real one on our Nexus 6P, though, right? That's not the dev anymore.
Right. That should be the real one. And the one for the Nexus 6 should be coming out in the next few weeks, which is what I've been waiting for, because I have a special upgrade part because mine, I'm rooted and all that stuff. I have a special upgrade process that I have to go through. So I have to wait for the AOSP, official AOSP release before I do that. So
I do feel like you're right, though, Leo, that phone technology, like, what else can you get?
Yeah.
So you've got two cameras. Maybe a phone will have three cameras.
Well, that's how, by the way, Intel solved the problem of, we can't go past 4 gigahertz for our chips. Right. Oh, we'll just put more chips in. That'll make them happy.
And maybe you'll have rounded corners on your screen, or maybe you'll have...
Just put in two cameras.
It feels like a lot of it is just fiddling.
It's fins.
At this point.
I call it fins on a Cadillac.
Yeah, fins.
Putting in more cameras and microphones does make sense because you can do more things with it.
No, I think look at the Echo, the Array mics and Echo, and the Echo are quite impressive what they're doing. Yeah.
So there's that sense of it. The other thing is, so part of it is Apple is doing a bit of the synthetic aperture stuff, but they're only doing it with two lenses that are next to each other. Mm-hmm. If you think about the VR stuff and you say, okay, I'll have a lens, here's my phone, hang on, a lens here and a lens here, suddenly you've got a stereoscopic thing to look through.
That's true. Yeah.
If you take that lens and align it with the lens on this side, then you've got the ability to take a spherical thing that way. So I suspect we're going to start soon thinking about those issues of like, okay, we'll have multiple lenses on the camera and turn them on in parallel. And the obvious ones are making these ones back and forth the same, making these ones symmetric. And then you could do the focus pull trick that Apple is doing, but you could also shoot stereoscopically. So we're going to see a bunch of these coming out as the lenses, basically... The cameras are already cheap enough. It's about getting enough bus bandwidth to have multiple streams, enough CPU to combine them.
The most interesting sort of theory I saw about Apple's AirPods was that they're going to start becoming the sort of control center for your phone.
Yeah, because Siri's in them.
Sure.
Exactly.
And I don't mind. So, I mean, I will look like an idiot with little drooly, spit coming out of my ear. Those microphones really look stupid, but... I would wear them all the time if it had enough functionality. It could be used as a hearing aid. You could use music, but you could communicate because it's the ultimate wearable. I think this is ultimately what Apple's plan is in the long run.
Yeah. It feels that way.
It's the Alexa that's attached to your head. Better, right?
No. But the reason Alexa works, I'm sorry, Echo works, is because I don't address anything. I address my home. Mm-hmm. I just speak wherever I am. It listens and responds. And that's kind of what you want. And if you got used to, and I'm sure Apple would hope you will do this, wearing your AirPods all the time, you could have the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
I suspect that's where we're headed. I don't think this current generation quite does it. 5 hours of battery life, for one thing, is a problem.
Yeah.
Although, as somebody pointed out, if you alternate ears, you could go longer.
It's actually attractive to me because when I'm cycling, I often just have one earbud in.
Right.
So I want to be able to hear the traffic as well.
Right.
When I'm listening to a podcast, I'm not trying to listen to music. So I'm listening to somebody talking one ear while I'm listening to traffic with the other ear.
Yeah.
So that would actually make some sense in that.
So if you're looking on ways to innovate on a smartphone, the ways are in things like wearables.
Yeah.
And stuff external to the phone. I guess cameras. I mean, there's going to be a lot of growth in cameras because you have a supercomputer attached to sensors. There's a lot you can do.
Yeah.
Oh, that's also Project Tango, right?
Yeah. Although I guess that phone's delayed now, right? That's a little disappointing. Although I'm not sure I care about mapping out my living room particularly. They'll have to show me how that's going to be of benefit.
Yeah.
I can see why a store would do that. In fact, we're going to pay $700 to have somebody do the 3D photos of the new studio. So when you do Google Maps and you get here, you can walk inside and walk around. That's really worth it, I think.
Yeah.
You could use VR for that.
Yeah, and you would, right? If you had if you had cardboard, you could do that. Yeah, you could be here.
You could do VR.
Yeah.
And we've done that before. We did the very first show we did out of here, we used an Osmo, which is Nokia's $60,000 3D camera to stream the show for people who wanted to. They could look around. They could be in the studio. I think it's of limited. After a while, I got to take this off.
Yeah.
Here's some scary news from Bruce Schneider, security god. He works as CTO of Resilient, an IBM company. He's a fellow at the Berkman Center and a board of EFF, board member of EFF. Someone over the past year or two has been probing the defenses, he writes, of companies that run critical pieces of the internet. These probes take the form of precisely calibrated attacks designed to determine exactly how well these companies can defend themselves, and I parenthetically, I think it's against a DDoS, and what would be required to take them down. We don't know who's doing this, but it feels like a large nation state, China or Russia, would be my first guesses. And the reason they know it's a nation state is the volume of packets that's being sent against these. And it's probes because they're not sustained. They're just trying it out and seeing what happens. One week with the attack would start at a particular level of attack and slowly ramp up before stopping. The next week, it would start at the higher point and continue and so on, as if the attacker were looking for the exact point of failure. This goes hand in hand with the news that two Israeli men have been arrested for running a DDoS for hire company for as little as $30 a month. You could DDoS anybody. You don't even have to know what you're doing. You just hire them. VDoS was their name. And you could DDoS anybody with fairly significant DDoSes. And we're talking attacks ranging from 10 gigabits per second to hundreds of gigabits per second. They, I guess they'd commandeered a network. They had it set up and they were selling it. They had a price list and everything.
And they were running in the public domain. They weren't running on BlackNet or DarkNet, whatever they call it.
They had all sorts of interesting kind of strategies to get paid, and how to work it. They although the, it, Brian Krebs writing in Krebs on Security thinks they've earned in excess of over $600,000 over the last 2 years. This is a capture of their website. How do I purchase a VDOS plan? This is very Web 2.0. The bronze is $19.99 a month. Silver is $29.99 a month. Gold is $39.99 a month. And if you want to go for the VIP, $200 a month. They call it Booter, but it is essentially DDoS. And, of course, VIP service.
Sounds like a great service.
Of course, they took a Bitcoin because why not? Mm-hmm. But they had all sorts of other ways to handle this. And what's scary is that it's barely even a script kiddie. Anybody could you know, hire these guys for as little as $30 a month.
Wow.
DDoS.
Scary.
Cool feature.
Yeah. Pretty neat, huh?
Yeah.
They use servers rented in Bulgaria. The worst, the arrest actually was preceded by a hack which revealed a database of customers numbering in the tens of thousands. Krebs' website, after publishing his story, guess what happened to Brian after he published that story? DDoS, 140 gigabits a second. You know, the first rule of Fight Club, you do not talk about Fight Club. Thank you for setting up VDoS. Let's take a break and wrap things up with any picks or stories we didn't get to, or anything you want to talk about. We will give you all three a chance to do that. Kevin Marks, IndieWeb.com. I'm sorry. Yes, IndieWeb.org. Damn it.
Do we have .com? I'm wondering now.
You should try. See.
Let's see.
I mean, who else would have it? really. Matthew Ingram, always a pleasure, from Fortune.com. Senior editor over there. And, of course, our good friend Aaron Newcomb from Floss Weekly. And Aaron, and we're pleased to see Randall came back this week. And it was the two of you, and I think you took the lead, but it's really great to see Randall back in fighting form. He spent a lot of time in the chat room too, which is great. I think a lot of people.
Yeah. It was really good to have him back. He's doing great for those that watch Floss Weekly, and he'll be back running the show next week. So that's good.
He had a little intestinal distress that actually caused a more serious collapse and was hospitalized for a couple of weeks. So he's all better now. Our show today brought to you by Rocket Mortgage from Quicken Loans, bringing the mortgage process into the 21st century. Fast, easy. It's completely online. And I think Quicken Loans figures anybody who watches this show, that's what they want. They don't want to make a trip down to the broker's office with a box of you know, banker's box full of papers. They want to be able to submit, you know, bank statements and pay stubs by just pushing a button. They want to get a quick turnaround time, and that's exactly how Rocket Mortgage works. All the complicated, time-consuming parts of applying for a refi or a mortgage are gone. No more searching through stacks of old files or paperwork. In fact, you can do it all from your couch because Rocket Mortgage works on your phone or tablet as well as on your computer. And you will get approved in minutes because computers. And it's a custom solution that fits your needs exactly at Rocket Mortgage. Now go to quickenloans.com/twig and find out more. quickenloans.com/twig, equal housing lender. Licensed in all 50 states. NMLS, consumeraccess.org, number 3030. And we thank Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans for their support. This just in from CNN. The Republican National Committee has been hacked. There are no secrets anymore. We'll see if WikiLeaks publishes that database. Wouldn't be surprised. Aaron Newcomb, what are you up to these days? Anything you'd like to share with the people? I know you've got the great Benicia Makerspace under your belt, and that's working great.
Yeah, that's right. So, you know, as most people know, I am a maker, and that's why. And also, you know, Jeff usually has a number, and he's not here.
You want to do a number?
I take over that role. Usually I do a project, but I've got so many things going on, they're all about halfway done, as usual. So instead of doing that, I thought I'd do a number.
Okay.
The number today is 10 million. $10 million.
Okay.
And it turns out that's the number of computers that Raspberry Pi computers that have been sold since their inception.
Mind-boggling. That's amazing.
There's a picture there of the Pi Zero, $5 for a half credit card size computer. So I use those all the time.
10 million units. I think that's
my, 10 million.
I'm sure even in the gang just never thought it would be like this. This is amazing.
Well, in fact, I think he even said, you know, their highest expectation at one point was 3 million. That was their not their stretch goal. Like, that was their dream goal. Like, I can't, you know, can't even imagine selling 3 million, and they've exceeded that by 3x plus. So they're doing really, really well. I recommend them all the time. What amazes me is that they've been able to pull this off, not from a hobbyist standpoint, because – you know, these things are obviously interesting to people like me. You know, you can just reach over and pull off your computer and take it with you, you know, put it in your pocket, whatever. It's a lot of fun. But they've broadened this out really to educators. They've also got distributors and resellers who are selling this thing at without any margin, which is, I think, unheard of. I don't know of anybody else that sells things without any margin. The reason they're, you know, able to do it is because there's a lot of other stuff you need to go with it that does have high margin. But even at that, you hardly ever hear of anything being sold without margin. So I mean, I think they've just done a fantastic job. All credit to them. And if you haven't tried one out, go pick one up because they're awfully fun to use.
I agree. And there's so many projects you can do. So many great things. We talked on Security Now yesterday, how you could do a VPN with the Raspberry Pi. There's so much. It's just incredible. Highly recommend it. Yeah, and congratulations to the Raspberry Pi Foundation. Remember, in the early days, they could barely make enough to keep up. I mean, they really didn't have the supply down. Now they can crank them out. That's great.
Yes, especially the normal size Pi. It's now version 3.
They figured it out. Yeah.
They're able to crank those out pretty well. And the zeros, for a long time, you couldn't get them. And now you're able to at least get one at a time from several different places. So they're catching up on the threes. I think that it's at $5. There's probably more skin in the game for them to get the $35 one out there and in people's hands than the $5 one. But boy, it sure is a powerful little platform.
Mm. Another number from our own Patrick Delahanty. He did some research. There are 15,400 shows publicly available in the TWIT database. And if the average show length is 2 hours, well, let's even make it 1 hour. There's plenty of Leo to build a bot. And Google, if you want to, be my guest. I could retire early. It wouldn't be that hard. Just rant about Twitter every week, right? That's all you'd have to do. Matthew
Ingram.
That'd
be a different bot. They'd have to
teach
you to make up a plausible Leo rant.
Leo rant bot. Matthew, a pick or a tip or anything you'd like to share with us? A story I missed?
There was something interesting actually was in the lineup. YouTube launching a community tab I thought was interesting.
Yeah, and that's just started now, right?
Yeah. So it's, you know, it doesn't sound that fancy really. I mean, so you get a tab where you can kind of connect with your viewers and you can share more content and interact and so on. But I think that could be a really just a great tool for lots of people who spend a lot of time on YouTube. Comments, as we know, on YouTube are flawed at best. I mean, they make Twitter look fantastic.
So I'm looking at my channel. Is this the discussion tab or is there actually a new community tab?
I think there's a new community tab.
Okay, so not everybody will have it yet.
Yeah, I don't know that it's gotten rolled out yet.
Yeah,
but it got if you know the Vlog brothers, the Greens.
Yeah,
it was developed with them. They've done a really amazing job of connecting with their community and
that's
building
so smart.
All sorts of things on top of that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's something that YouTube has kind of not really devoted a lot of time to in the past. Yeah. And so it's interesting to see that happen.
So there it is on the Vlog Brothers site, I guess. That's it says community, yeah. And anybody can participate.
Instead of having your own, so instead of having to have your own site or your own blog or your own, or push people to your Facebook page, you can do it all inside YouTube.
So is it Google Plus shaped? It looks a little bit plusy, but
it does look a little bit like that.
There's let's see, you got comments, so you can make a post, and then there's threaded comments after it. You can vote it up or down. Yeah, it does kind of have that feel to it. This is an addition, though, right? Google Plus didn't have the thumbs up, thumbs down thing.
Right.
That's great. That's kind of Reddit style commenting. It's really more like Reddit, isn't it?
It is. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's gonna be interesting.
Yeah, and they're getting great engagement here. Hundreds, in some cases, thousands of comments on a single
post. Well, those guys are legendary.
Well, yeah, of course.
They're the kings of community.
Yeah. And that's, we've learned anything, that's the key to success.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Not build an audience, build a community.
I remember one of the brothers, which one writes the books? Was it Hank or John? Anyway, he read, I think it was a chapter of his upcoming book. This was a couple of years ago, and just did a YouTube, here's me reading part of the chapter, and the book hit number one on Amazon. It hadn't even been released yet.
And by the way, before anybody kind of, and I would be tempted to do this, dismisses this as, YouTube, so what? There's a whole generation, this is how they get their news. In fact, if you look at
exactly
the Vlog Brothers, understanding the tax plans of Donald Trump and Ted Cruz, 668,000 views. Understanding the primaries, 465,000 views. Benghazi explained, 800,000 views. These guys have bigger constituencies and audiences and among
Much
young
bigger.
People than the networks.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And my daughters, who are 20-something and 18, that is one of their go-to. They've got certain specific YouTubers they go to for different types of news. Some of it is political. Some of it's, cultural or pop culture. But that is, it's a huge, huge part of their media consumption.
Yeah. Boy, that's pretty impressive. They've made a series of videos how to vote in every state. So they take seriously their responsibility, which I think is great. Wow. That's kind of an eye-opener. Thank you, Matthew. How about you, Kevin Marks? Let me guess, IndieWeb.org.
IndieWeb.org, there's Homebrew Website Club tonight in Sunnyvale, next week in San Francisco, Brighton, and places. And the weekend after that, not this weekend, the weekend after that, there's actually a camp in Brighton, which is the full weekend.
IndieWeb
Creating Brighton. So there's that coming up. But I wanted to show you a little thing that I had to get, an IndieWeb thing I put together this week. So if you go to, are you running Chrome?
Yes.
Okay. Install the plugin.
Okay.
So add this to Chrome.
All right. Actually, Carson's doing it. Let me do it, Carson, at this side. So I have to go to get that link. It's in the, I'm sure it's in the notes here. So let me just.
It's j.mp/indieme.
Oh, that's easy. j.mp/indie.
Indieme.
I-N-D-I-E-M-E. There you go. And then I'm going to add that to Chrome. Okay, verify me. It's been added to Chrome. Now what?
So now go to kevinmarks.com.
Okay. Oh, because you've been verified.
So what this is distributed verification.
Yeah.
So you see my little links on the right there.
Oh.
These little green things that are appearing is it checking that those places link back with a RealMe.
Oh.
So it's looking for
RealMe.
It's looking for links with RealMe on them. Then it's going and loading that site and see if they link back with a RealMe. And then because it's a browser plugin, if you click through to Twitter, you will see the verification work the other way. So if you click through to my Twitter,
mm-hmm.
and scroll down so you can see the link on the side.
Oh.
Check.
So it's really modifying existing pages. It's not something, that you have to do.
So, but the RealMe's are already there on lots of sites. They're on Twitter and WordPress and GitHub and, Known. And lots of spaces use RealMe because it's a standard we put together 13 years ago, something like that, for saying these sites are both me. So what I realized was that we can actually do verification this way in a very distributed way. Because if my site's linking to that site and the other site's linking back, then that's clear it is the same person, or at least the person who controls both the sites. Maybe they've hacked all your sites. But, at least it's not someone saying, I'm Leo, look, and I'm linking to your site, because the link back doesn't show that.
Right.
So, if you go to twitter.com at Leo Laporte, it links to Leoville, and Leoville links back. You get a green tick on it.
Yeah, I just went to my Keybase page. Unfortunately, I'm getting red X's on everything. I guess I have to add some RealMe tags.
Yes, that RealMe links back. Yeah, and part of the problem is that some sites only let you have one link. So it works better if you've got, if you've got a central hub that you link everything to. So it's like Twitter and GitHub will only let you have one RealMe link, whereas Google Plus will let you have an arbitrary number, and other sites will let you have more.
Okay.
So, but the point is,
it did do it on Twitter though, because I guess I must Leoville.com. Well, that's why, because that's with Known.
There you go.
Yeah. So Known is done properly. Yeah.
Yeah. I made this because I suddenly realized, hang on. When Twitter was talking about the verification thing, I thought, well, we've had this verification thing for a while. We just don't show the check marks. So I made the browser show the check marks. So now you can see them as verified. And it works on, it should work on new social and things as well, assuming they've actually marked up the pages and not generating the JavaScript.
Yeah, I have to get twit.tv to RealMe and Tech Guy Labs. So that is a meta tag that doesn't appear in the page, but it appears in the HTML code. What should that RealMe be?
Yeah, so if you view source on one of the links, well, view source on one of mine, it just ahref equals the place you're linking to, rel equals me, and put it there. And it's put in by default by Twitter and GitHub and Google Plus and a lot of sites already.
Good. I'm glad to hear that.
This is basically distributed verification. So you get little check marks next to places that have actually verified. Yeah. And I may turn off the red ones eventually because they're kind of obnoxious.
It's fine, Rel. So you see all of these.
They're mostly actually at the bottom. I think they're at the bottom.
Here's a RealMe. All right, let's keep looking. There's got to be some more. There's 21 of them, so there's a bunch of them. There we go.
There we go.
So yep. this is your kind of your link list. And you see the rel equals quote me quote next to that link, just to say that's my site, that's my site, that's my site, that's my site.
And then on each of those sites, I've done the same thing and done a link back. So if you went through to my blog or Flickr or whatever, the link back is there as well, and it'll show the check mark the other way around as well. The point is, it's mutual linking, but it's a way of doing verification that doesn't require one central site to hold the key, because it's distributed.
Yeah, so that's kind of why I use Keybase. Keybase, of course, also keeps my PGP key, but Keybase has a much stricter verification thing. You have to be able to modify the DNS of the site in order to get to verify it,
which is more work. And the point about this is,
this is easy.
Just to modify the HTML, and actually, many sites will just do this by default because it's a sensible thing to do.
Yeah, awesome. Hey, thank you guys. What a great show. What a lot of fun. Matthew Ingram, Fortune.com. The sun has now set in beautiful Toronto. We kept you long enough. Mm-hmm. Thank you, Matthew. We'll see you again very soon. You can follow him on fortune.com. On the Twitter, he's M-A-T-H-E-W-I. Aaron Newcomb, thank you to NetApp that is very generous with you and your time because that's your day job, but he's always been very available to us, and we're so grateful because we just love what you do. Follow him anywhere you want, Aaron Newcomb on Twitter or on Google Plus.
Or Facebook or wherever else.
Wherever else you want.
And I'll be filling in for Father Robert while he's away.
Oh, good.
On Know-How.
You're our new Know-How guy. Yay!
I'll be on Know-How. And so if you're interested in some of the projects that I've done in the past or talked about, like my Raspberry Pi sprinkler project, I've also done homemade Android security camera. We're going to be talking about those on Know-How. So check those episodes out when they come out.
Nice. And Kevin Marks, always a pleasure. Thank you for bringing us your garden once again. IndieWeb.org.
It's pretty quiet today. Yeah,
except for that one plane. We'll see you real soon. We do This Week in Google every Wednesday, 1:30 Pacific, 4:30 Eastern, 20:30 UTC. Jeff and Stacy should be back next week, but I won't be. I'm going on vacation. Who's going to host the show while I'm gone, Karsten? Do we know? Is it Jason? Probably Jason. Yeah, Jason Howell will be here. And so will Stacy and Jeff. And I'll be back a few weeks hence. I think October 11th is my return day, about a month from now. What? How does he do it? I don't know. We'll see you next time on This Week in Google. Bye-bye.